Welcome to Farcast. Now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Welcome to a special China edition of the Farcast. Normally, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we have three segments where we look at Wall Street, Washington, and the world, and how those three areas affect the investor's outlook, the landscape for investing, and how things are going to change with the economies, both domestic and foreign, and how it all comes together, the confluence of all these events. China has been so much in the headlines. We are joined tonight by two wonderful experts. Of course, our own senior political analyst, Dan Mahaffey, from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress. You'll remember that Dan has his undergraduate and master's degree from Georgetown University. He has studied security studies. He studied Mandarin Chinese. He has studied in China after his time at Georgetown. And then we're also joined by Chris Campbell, who is a director of Yum China Holdings. He's on that board. You may have listened to another Farcast where I went through his full bio, but very quickly, Chris joined Yum Brands in 1997, Senior Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary. He coordinated the franchise and multi-brand policies, and then the additional title of Chief Franchise Policy Officer. Yum Brands, as you may know, is comprised of three global brands: Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell. Over 39,000 restaurants in 125 countries, if you can imagine that. His master's degree in economics from Northwestern University and a law degree from Harvard. His advanced management program at Harvard also. So great expertise here as we kind of figure out what's it like to do business in China. And let's take a look at some of the economics in China. Remember that on the Farcast, we believe that money is hard to make. We believe that old-fashioned research, hard work, discipline, and patience are the keys to successful investing. And finally, we believe that emotion is the foe of the long-term investor. If you are feeling gleeful or scared or sad, don't make a decision with your money. Go take a walk around the block. Bring every bit of reason and dispassion and deliberation and deliberateness to your financial decisions. All right. China, 1.39 billion people, GDP, about two-thirds of the U.S., $14.2 trillion in annual GDP, and growing more quickly than the United States. Average income in China, $16,760 a year versus about $60,000 here in the U.S. $14 trillion GDP in China really dwarfs almost three times the size of the next largest world economy, which is Japan at $5.2 trillion, Germany at $4.2 trillion, and then the U.K., India, and France all tied at $2.9 trillion. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I was in India in the fall. Keep your eye on India. There's another very large population, many billions of people in India and emerging economy there. So let's start with Dan Mahaffey tonight. Dan, talk to us a little bit. We've had this trade war going on. There seems to be progress. You think we're getting anywhere closer to any sort of a substantial deal? And who needs it more? Does the U.S. or does China need this more?
Well, I think we both need it, and that's going to be the typical Washington answer to your question. But for the U.S., we obviously need to change some of the policies related to China, but continue the trade and economic relationship. And then in China, there's a lot of reformers who see these negotiations as a way to perhaps open up the economy further, put in some of the reforms they need to continue growth and their transition to a consumer-led rather than export-based economy.
And that's a big transition, isn't it, to a consumer-led as opposed to export-based. That's why this emerging middle class in China is so important. Dan, from your time in China and studying there, how would you sort of describe this? Is it emerging capitalism? Is that the right way to describe it?
Well, I think the history of China and the Chinese people is that they've actually always been capitalist and entrepreneurial oriented, that the communism was kind of applied as the style de vogue in the mid 20th century. But what we're really seeing, though, are Chinese consumers who increasingly want a higher standard. They reflect a globalized mixture of demands where they want something that is simultaneously very Chinese, but also part of a global environment, you know, be it luxury goods or cuisine or range of things. And then those standards, kind of work across both ways, where I think you look at both countries where you have a lot of people who want to do business, want to see the next generation do well and succeed, but politics and that whole mess, the swamp on either side, keeps getting in the way.
What a great lead-in, though, Dan. Thank you. I think that's very insightful. But what a great lead-in, particularly your comment there that the Chinese want to have something that's really Chinese. They want to grow something that's uniquely Chinese, culturally Chinese. Chris Campbell, you are so wonderful to be with us. Chris is an expert's expert. If you need international insight from one of the most experienced business people in the world, Chris Campbell's your guy. So, Chris, Yum Brands really has developed Yum China Holdings, it sounds like, to address that notion that something really Chinese is created. Tell us about that.
That's a great question. And that's the business model that Yum China, which, as you know, is now totally separate, is following. We looked at the Chinese consumer and decided that we would offer, in addition to our standard KFC and pizza products that cater to the local taste. So if you go in, Michael, to a KFC restaurant, you can get pork, seafood, rice dishes, soup.
In China.
In China, breakfast.
Okay.
And Pizza Hut, same thing, breakfast. The Chinese consumer likes convenience, and so delivery is a very big part of it. And digital.
Really?
Delivery.
Okay, so now hang on. So yeah. I can order when I'm in. This is great. I can get, I've always thought, when you're here in the United States, we get Chinese takeaway. Now, actually, in China, they're getting U.S. takeaway or KFC takeaway. That's terrific. I'm so glad
KFC
to hear that.
And
that's
kind of fun. KFC and Pizza Hut delivery. It's very big. Digital is very important in China. Digital and payment, ordering, and loyalty.
Really? How do the digital payments work? Because do Chinese use credit cards?
Yes, and a variety of different methods of digital payment. We have websites where online ordering is state of the art, and loyalty programs. And in China, like everything else, everything's on a big scale, Michael. So if you look at KFC and Pizza Hut in China, we have over 150 million members on our digital service.
Of the loyalty brands, 150 million loyalty members, really?
Yes, and who access through payment ordering and loyalty programs.
Do they work the same? Do the loyalty programs work the same as in the U.S.? You get the same kind of rewards or coupons, or
No, they're customized, and we're still deciding how best to reward customers. But the notion is very similar.
Okay.
You mentioned in the last podcast artificial intelligence,
and that's
very state of the art in China. And the example that you gave is where I think Yum China is going, where you can have facial recognition software coming in. And it's not in all our KFCs, but we're beginning to implement it, where you can actually come in and be recognized through new technology.
But there is a KFC in China that has this, right?
Oh, yes. Several of them.
So I walk in the door, I'm walking in off the street in China, and tell me what I'm going to meet in terms of the technology and the facial recognition. I mean, this is something we don't have in the U.S.
No, it believe me, it's a state of the art, cutting edge. You will see a screen and that will recognize you, access your file, and enable you to remind you what you've ordered there before.
It's going to say, "Hello, Michael. Would you like the extra crispy this time too?"
Correct, and it
really?
Will also have your it will have your credit card or your method of payment on file. It's just phenomenal, and it is attracting enormous attention globally, because I think that's where the future of the industry is going. In terms of offering convenience and innovation.
Thinking, though.
Chris, Michael, I do want to just a little bit of context. One, with that many loyalty members, that is more people than who voted in the 2016 election. When they have that.
Yeah.
Just to provide a little context of the mass loyalty program that they've developed. And two, for a U.S. audience to understand that these technological developments in China are not something that you can be scared of or contain. We need to figure out how to utilize them in our own way and integrate them into our economy, because you're not going to push back the tide. It's how you harness it.
You know, that's an excellent point, I think. And I'm thinking, you know, Chris, as we look in the U.S., it's some of the technology has taken jobs away, and that's been part of the fear that you don't have the same people at checkout at the grocery store. You have the self-checkout or self-checkout at Home Depot or self-check-in at the airport, wherever it may be. And yet, it doesn't look like you're saving on people in China. You have 450,000 employees. Can you run an automated restaurant with? I mean, how many people do you need to run a restaurant in China?
You can run an automated restaurant with fewer people. It's a question, Michael, of diverting the people to other tasks within the restaurant.
Like what? But, what do you have them do?
Keeping the restaurant totally clean, being sure things are running correct, ordering logistic support for the restaurant. There are many, many functions that can occur.
Apparently, there are 450,000 of them anyway.
Yeah, well, we haven't yet innovated all the restaurants, but I think, you know, there always will be the business is a people business, and there always will be a great store manager who will be vital in bringing customers back. A really good store manager is essential. But for some of the repetitive tasks and where order accuracy and efficiency come into play, the new technology is where I think the industry is going. And that's certainly, I think, not only going to be in China, but as Harry pointed out, probably around the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break here on the Farcast. We're going to come back. Again, more with Dan Mahaffey, more with Chris Campbell, more China, understand the restaurants, understand the emerging middle class, and this wonderful surge and apparent trend to want to dine out as Yum continues to open restaurants around the world. Oh, and something else Chris Campbell told me before, people are really drinking a lot of coffee over in China. Didn't know it would work. They were tea drinkers in China. Coffee wasn't big. Coffee's getting big. When we come back on the Farcast.
You're listening to Farcast.
Thank you for joining us this week on the special edition of the Farcast on innovation in China. Next week, our regular Farcast will return with special guest Tony Fratto, a Washington insider whose experience and expertise is second to none. Go beyond the headlines every week with the Farcast, Wall Street, Washington, and the world. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
You're listening to Farcast. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thank you so much for joining us and for being with us on our China Farcast special. We're understanding so much about how business is getting done, the tariff relations. We have Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress. and my friend Chris Campbell, who is a director of Yum China Holdings, has been involved in working with China and other international corporations for a lot of his career. Master's degree in economics from Northwestern University, law degree from Harvard. He is tremendously qualified and has probably an understanding of doing business in China that is really unparalleled among U.S. executives, really is. So we're so lucky to have him on the Farcast. Now, we were talking about doing business and the technology in China. Chris, talk to us for just a second about chicken in China. I mean, I've had Chinese food that has a lot of chicken and vegetables and things in it. What was it like? Was it a big new thing introducing fried chicken in China?
It was. Of course, chicken has been a protein in China forever, as you point out. But the concept of a branded fried chicken product sold the way KFC does, original and crispy, was unique. And the very first KFC opened in Beijing, China, in 1987 in Tiananmen Square. And was a
really in Tiananmen Square. That's terrific. There's the KFC, the first ones in Tiananmen Square.
And
that's
wild. It's still there today. It's still one of the busiest. From there, Yum, you know, when the Yum China division was part of Yum Brands, owned by Pepsi at that point, tremendous
right.
investment in the infrastructure. And, you know, we built it up to where it is today as a separate company with nearly 6,000. KFC's across China.
Nearly 6,000 across China. And where do you source the chicken? So just where do you get enough chickens to, because you've got, let's see, Yum Brands, Yum China, has something like 9,000 stores, correct? And about 6,000 or 7,000 KFCs?
Yeah, about 6,000 KFCs, 2,200 Pizza Huts. 300.
How big are these restaurants? What's the footprint of the? Are they the same size as the U.S. or are they bigger?
They come in all sizes. Originally, the KFCs are about the same size. They were larger with larger dining room capacities. In some of the major cities, they still are much larger. Pizza Hut tends to be larger with a large dine-in concept. Very much upscale restaurants, very modern, very state-of-the-art stuff. They're big restaurants. And,
would we recognize them? I mean, if somebody's been to Pizza Hut here in the U.S., would they feel at home in the Pizza Hut
in China? You would see the Pizza Hut logo. There is no word for pizza in China, so we have permission at Pizza Hut to sell a wide variety of items, pasta, steak, etc. It's sit down service, beautifully done. But you would see the.
Well,
pizza
wait a minute.
Hut
if there's no word for pizza in China, what do they call it? They call it pizza.
There's a Chinese word that I think it's House of Delicious Foods. So it's a different word, but the when you order pizza, it is called pizza in China. But
so we can just call pizza. Okay, I got that part, and it's, I like that though. Maybe
yeah,
maybe Dan, we can open the House of Delicious Foods here. It sounds like a a lot of subscribers.
Yeah, over there it's just Bisa, which just means it's kind of a homonym type of transliteration. So
it's good to have someone who speaks Mandarin. Exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So,
yeah.
So yeah, you have a wide lane to provide your services. Although I have to admit, when I was studying over there and living over there, it Pizza Hut did still help with the homesickness.
You were one of the few in there ordering pizza, probably, Dan.
Probably, it's a long story, but we could do a whole podcast. They had Christmas decorations up year round in that Pizza Hut because Christmas was America over there.
Really,
right?
Fabulous. And yeah. How much of the business now over there in China is delivery, Chris?
About 17% at Pizza Hut and KFC. Taco Bell is very new to China. And so we're just experimenting with, we only have about 10 or 11 of them now in big cities. There was a recognition of the brand through social media, but Mexican inspired food is new to China. And so we're trying out different innovative food categories to get Taco Bell going. We think it has a long runway. In China, the stores that are up now are doing well, but it's still very early days for Taco Bell.
And tell us about coffee sales, will you? Lots of coffee sales. I mean, how did you get into selling coffee? I mean, Starbucks is establishing a pretty good presence in China.
Yes.
They selling a lot of coffee, too?
This debate goes back a long way, you know, because if you went back to China, and Dan can testify to this, you know, 25, 30 years ago, it wasn't clear whether the Chinese consumer would move from tea to coffee. And that debate now has been very cleanly resolved that coffee is a welcome concept in China. We sell a lot of coffee at our KFC stores, just simply KFC coffee. Starbucks has made a good entry into China with its coffee and is building stores. Yum China, just last year, we developed our own brand called Coffee and Joy, which is a upscale coffee house with a great coffee.
Coffee and Joy. We need to sell this better here, Dan, I think, yeah.
Well, Michael, I want you to go to China and visit one of these stores. It's fabulous inside, very ultra-modern, attracting young consumers, very promising but new brand. In China.
Okay, Harry, our producer Harry's listening. Harry, let's schedule another forecast from China. I think I want to do it right from the Yum Brand store, okay?
We'd love to do it. Love to have
There we go.
There
Excellent.
Go.
Back to sourcing chicken, I never answered that. As much of it as we can in China, we source, but we also, Yum China also sources chicken, some chicken from Brazil, which is I believe the largest protein sourcing country in the world with beef.
Really?
And chicken.
Brazil is the largest choice of. Okay, that's interesting. So you've said that Yum China now has 9,000 stores. They're opening more. How many stores? What's the target? What's the goal? Do you have 20,000 stores? Do you stop at 15,000 stores? What's the right number?
There is no mathematical right number. There is no limit, and there are really two things that govern this. One is we carefully watch whether there's any cannibalization as a new store is opened, you know, because it's a trade off. You don't want to open a new store that takes away sales from its neighboring store, which we call cannibalization. That really has not significantly been a limit at all. Then saturation. And I go back to a number you cited earlier. In China, there are, you know, 1.4 billion people. In the U.S., 327 million. And yet there are many more fast food outlets in the U.S. than there are in China. So the runway for growth is unlimited, in our opinion. And it's governed by you know, those two issues. Can you get good sites? Do you have the development capacity? Do you have the supply chain capacity to keep building? And then the growing middle class. You know, we estimate the consumer retail food market in China is all in $650 billion market. It's a huge market. Now, there is new competition coming from the U.S. and elsewhere, but we are the first move. You know, Yum China is the first mover, and that's a huge market with tremendous opportunity to grow, I believe.
What would you tell U.S. investors as they look at deploying? And Dan, I'm going to ask you the same question. As U.S. investors say, I think I want to own some of this economy that's growing faster than the United States' economy, and you've got a population that's, basically four times the size, almost five times the size of the U.S. population. I want to own here. tell us what we should think about, Chris, and then Dan, about what you would be thinking about in terms of making an investment, any types of investments in China.
I'll start with a couple of observations that don't necessarily apply to Yum China, because, as I said, I've done business in China with the other global companies that I've worked for. I think you want to look at having very good relations with the Chinese government, understanding the Chinese laws and regulations.
How do you tell that as an investor, Chris? How do I see that as I look from the outside? How do I say this company, because most of them are going to say, we have great relations with the Chinese. How do I tell which ones do and which ones don't? Is there something I can look for?
I don't know if there's anything tangible you can look for. I think you have to look at the track record of success. In a company like Yum China, it's been in China since 1987. And the other thing an investor might look at is, are there reporting results from the company that are subject to U.S. governance and the financial reporting requirements of the New York Stock Exchange, SEC, GAAP numbers? And with a company like Yum China, now one of the you asked me earlier why Yum separated it. Our numbers are all out there and can be seen. And so you have an advantage of participating in this market where the it's growing by whatever measure you use. But you have some confidence that the reporting that you get is number one, focused on China. Not just the division of a large, huge multinational company. It is, everything that the company reports relates to China, and that it's tested by U.S. Reporting requirements and GAAP.
You know, that's great. That's excellent advice. And ladies and gentlemen, that's something that I've looked for years, no matter what company or country I may be interested in investing. Companies that have to report according to GAAP and have to report and are subject to U.S. Regulation. There is a clarity. I think there is a premium afforded to U.S. companies that trade on the New York Stock Exchange that are governed by the NASD and the SEC and the U.S. Stock Exchange rules, the Department of Commerce rules. There is a clarity that you can see when you know what you're looking at when you're looking at one of those balance sheets as an investor. It's not true in other countries around the world. There are different business practices where our high level of standards, at least for accounting and transparency, are not as embraced as around the world. You just don't know what you're buying. So I think that's an excellent point from Chris Campbell. Dan Mahaffey, weigh in, and then we've got to go, guys.
Well, I think I want to second the reporting standards and that mixture of rule of law, because I think companies around the world, even if they are not as directly transnational as this case, there are some tech unicorns that don't have as much accounting transparency as a multinational brand might have that is publicly traded. Beyond that, though, I think if you're looking in China, Yum Brands is a very useful example to look at for future companies. If you look at how they took their brands, which are quintessentially American, but understood that you simply couldn't just transplant them and force them upon the Chinese. It had to be a fusion of the two. So you look at how KFC, Pizza Hut adapted their menu. You look at how they've expanded Enjoy Coffee. I know some of their other brands like East Dawning and Little Sheep, which also reflect a very much a Chinese influence on the company. And almost if you're investing in China, you would want to imagine a company where it's, if you had to pick its geographic center, it's somewhere in the middle of the Pacific. Combine the best of both, where it's the American entrepreneurialism, Chinese entrepreneurialism, and a mixture of these cultures. Because just like Europe meeting the new world, I think the future is going to be defined by the Pacific and how we meld these mindsets and cultures.
Dan Mahaffey, Chris Campbell, I can't thank you both enough for appearing on the Farcast on this special China edition. I've learned so much. I can't remember a Farcast where I've learned this much. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope it's been helpful to you, and we will be back with more specials. I hope that we'll be able to get Chris Campbell back for you. Dan Mahaffey next week on the Farcast. We thank you so much for joining us again this week for this special edition on China. Thank you so much, with a very grateful heart, for all of you who take us around in your cars and offices and your earbuds on your walks and at the gym. We appreciate it a lot. In Naples, Florida, for the Farcast, I'm Michael Farr. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to tonight's special edition of the Farcast. We'd like to remind you that if you think you have heard a recommendation to buy or sell any security, you haven't. The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal or financial advice. You should consult with your financial professional to determine what may be best for your individual needs and your individual goals. If we can be of assistance at Farr, Miller & Washington, please give us a call. Tonight's guest was Chris Campbell, director of Yum Brands China. The interview with Chris regarding Yum China may include forward-looking statements within the meaning of Section 27A of the Securities Act of 1933 as amended, and Section 21E of the Securities Act of 1934 as amended. We intend all such forward-looking statements in the interview to be covered by the safe harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Thank you again for listening, and until next week, it's the Farcast, Wall Street, Washington, and the world.